Okay, thank you. So, a lot of people believe that housing is the core issue in terms of the negative impacts of migration on housing. And this was spelt out in some detail in the House of Lords Select Committee report in 2008, which you probably remember said that there was a rather small net benefit per person from migration, and that that could be significantly offset by the housing system. And we used a lot of evidence or at least analysis from the National Housing and Planning Advisory Unit, which has now been got rid of, and a number of other places. But what they argued was that immigration could add a significant amount to real house prices over a 20-year period. Remember, we're talking 2008, when prices over 10 years before had been going up quite rapidly, so this was not large in relationship to the totality of that increase, but it was significant. And that, by implication, this would have effects on wage rates and competitiveness, which were offsetting many of the benefits which were perceived. Secondly, that there were potential increases in pressures on social housing, where there'll be in direct competition with the local population and on local services, which Pam will be talking about. So they argued that it could well be enough to offset the benefits of migration. They weren't necessarily taking into account all the ones that have been talked about today. Actually, I think there could have been another starting point, and that's the much more sort of practical local starting point, which is people are concerned about migration, and if you ask them why, it's nearly always housing. So it's sort of inbuilt to the population that housing is a very competitive area, and migrants are taking our homes. And in particular, that they're taking our social housing homes. It doesn't matter what statistics you put forward, everybody believes that, or at least appears to. But they don't actually much mind whether they're truly migrant or whether they've come from the next borough. If they're taking our homes, if they're outsiders, then that's bad. But where there is particular problems is in terms of large units, I mean, large family homes, where there's a massive shortage. But in practice, migrant housing demand is actually generally lower than the indigenous population's demand for a significant period of time. So the core of our story is basically we need to know about turnover in order to know about housing. Because on arrival, they don't form as many households, they have incomes which the income distribution which tends to put them also into the private rented sector, and most importantly they're in the private rented sector where the amount of housing which they consume is less than it would be in other parts of the system. By 10 years on we've got a similar demand to those born in the UK. So if we're getting a 3-year turnover, if everybody's leaving after 3 years, then their impact on the housing system is quite different from average. And importantly, these types of things are not reflected, for instance, in the household projections. ONS agrees that there should be, for instance, household formation rates which are related to the time people have been in the country, but equally say they haven't got the time to do it, they haven't got the resources to do it. So the fact that very young people form more for obvious particular reasons, but it's a very, very small group, so we're really interested in that. It's the 25 to 29, 30 to 30, 44. They form very significant fewer households until at least they've been here 5 years, and after 5 years it gets close to being the average by 10 years. And secondly, in terms of income distribution, this is probably the same table as Ian's, it's just turned round slightly differently. But clearly what we have here is some nice, very rich people coming in from from rich countries who stay a relatively short period of time, as we'll see in a moment, are normally in the private rented sector. And we have, importantly, people in migrants from poor countries taking a long time or some years to get to the average for that type of population. So on the income distribution, we're going to be consuming less housing than average, as well as forming fewer households. And the particular issue is then, of course, the tenure in which they live. On average, people who live in the private rented sector consume very considerably less housing than people who live in the owner-occupied sector, and particularly those who live owned outright. And so what you've got is 78% of migrants from poor countries, 79% living in the private rented sector, but 87% of those from rich countries living in it. And they go home, so it goes down quite quickly, while the poor countries tend to move from here into, to some extent, here. But I think in this context, we have to remember that 3+ years doesn't mean that it's only 4 years. It means these people might have been here 20, 30, 40 years. And the big growth in migrants in social housing is long ago and is now much more difficult to get into that sector. So the basic story of the numbers are we need to know who goes home, because that's going to impact enormously on what the demand for housing is. Then we go on to the work we did for MAC.
I'm going to talk a bit about a project that we did for MAC last year, looking at the demand for housing from tiers 1 and 2 migrants. This wasn't confined to London, it was for all of the UK. And just to remind ourselves who tiers 1 and 2 migrants are, tier 1 migrants are people of exceptional talent. There's a limit of 1,000 visa holders a year for them, or investors or entrepreneurs, and there's no limit on those. And the tier 2 migrants, who are also considered skilled migrants, are those in shortage occupations, the RLM, something labor market, it means you can't find a local employee, and intercompany transfers. And there's a minimum, at the time that we were doing the research, the minimum salary for these categories in general was £20,000 a year, but I dare say it's more than that now. In doing this research, we looked at data from the labor force survey, data from the annual population survey, and then we did some pieces of qualitative work interviewing estate agents and companies that were bringing in corporate transfers to talk to them about their housing situations. The quantitative analysis suggested that about 75% of the visa holders formed separate households when they first arrived, and the others were mainly in shared accommodations. So they were single sharers living in big houses or big flats. And we've heard already about the predominance of Indian ICT workers as a group among these skilled migrants, and that was a common residential pattern for them. The migrants tend to be younger than the general population, and single people or couples, but the longer they stay here, the more they form separate households, and Christine's talked about that. For migrants as a whole, this pattern is the same for this subset of skilled migrants. Slightly more of them are in owner occupation when they first arrive than for migrants as a whole, and the tenure mix as for migrants as a whole changes over time. The longer they stay here, the more likely they are to go into owner occupation. So after 5 years, 45% of them are in owner occupation, but that's compared to 68% for England as a whole. So even after several years, the most important impact is going to be on the private rented sector, because almost none of these migrants would be eligible to live in social housing. And they make up a pretty small proportion of migrants overall. We reckoned that we were talking about roughly 30,000 households a year, so 30,000 dwelling units that would be required, 45,000 people if you include dependents. And based on a series of assumptions we made, we reckoned that would account for about 7% of the total additional flows up to 2017. Our interviews were concentrated in four areas where there was the greatest concentration of migrants of this type. That was London, for obvious reasons. We've already talked about how important they are in London. Ipswich, because of the insurance industry there and also a lot of IT companies there. Reading, same thing for IT. And Aberdeen, because of the oil industry. There are identifiable sub-markets for, say, wealthy international corporate bankers in Kensington and Richmond, or Japanese families in Ealing, because that's where the Japanese school is, Chinese people in Canary Wharf. But overall, the impact of this type of migrant, even in those areas where they are concentrated, was seen to be quite small. That's quite in the American sense, not quite in the British sense, very small. And our rough estimate for the impact on house prices of the group of tier one and tier two type migrants was well below 1%. This might generate some intertenure moves, but the effect on new supply, which is very non-responsive to demand in the UK, is likely to be very limited. So I'll get back to Christine for a few final observations.
Three final observations, one of a short term. Fundamentally, newly arrived migrants put less pressure. So if we need the workers, then the housing aspects are usually massively overestimated in the work which regards housing as the cost. Secondly, and increasingly, non-refugee migrants have fewer and fewer rights to social housing in the short term, and basically only get them now on residence, because no social housing landlord will take someone unless they are eligible for housing benefit, and the eligibilities for housing benefit are being more constrained. The impact on the private sector rents and house prices is quite limited, and importantly, as Cass said, is often competition between migrants rather than, all right, of course it spreads out, but the concentration is between migrants. And we think that the impact on the housing standards in terms of overcrowding and sharing must be very significant, but our data is really very poor on that. Hopefully the census will help. Into the longer term, is the migrant impact simply going to be proportional in just another member of the population? And I think the answer to that is no reason to believe anything other. But of course, a lot of the migrants are relatively young, so they are into the childbearing age and that process. So we need to look at the people who came in the 90s and how much they're working through. And there is some evidence that relatively short-term migrants are more interested in new build than the rest of us. Some evidence of dependence on social housing, but I think this is more of a historical thing than a reality of the current time. We have more and more data on who is being allocated and fewer people who aren't either married or partnered by a Brit is going to be coming into the system. I think for London there is a really important issue of, do they move away from the areas to which they first come and move out into the outer suburbs? And one would expect that to be the case. We know that they have been particularly, well, sorry, we don't know. We think that they have been particularly hit by the incapacity to move since 2008, which is the sort of general problem that Londoners haven't moved out to anything like the same extent. And obviously the child-pairing patterns are very important on that, because people move when they have children, when they're 5, when they're 11. They don't move much in between. So migrants do generate housing costs and housing constraints, but we don't know. We haven't done reworked it with the more complicated thing. And just because in housing terms this is possibly the more important issue at the present time, it just seems worth pointing out that housing can be affected not just by people but by investment. And international investment is what is running the London system at the present time. So Savills' latest report says it's grown from 25% of new build in prime locations. We've expanded the prime locations, nothing like the Olympics, and we're now up to 63%. Now, we do not know how international investors behave as compared to the indigenous population in letting this housing out to other people, or whether they are themselves living in it for a month, a year, or whatever, or just their children. Increasing domination of Pacific Asian demand, etc. And at the moment, they're keeping the housing market going. There will be even fewer levels of production, even lower levels of production. But into the longer term, they may be reducing availability because they have a higher vacancy rate. Thank you very much.